B-Pod Studios.
Hi, how are you, honey?
Hello!
This is where Boston talks sports.
I'm overwhelmed. You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now you have a sports hub. It is Toucher and Rich and man who sat.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Hi, how are you, honey?
Hello!
I'm overwhelmed. You can eat a lot at one sitting.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
It is Toucher and Rich, and man who sat down at the very end of that last break and was like, what the hell did I just walk into? Mr. Billy Jaffe of Nesson joins us.
Who doesn't love walking into talk like that?
But you immediately said, it was like, all right. So you how old were you when you got the talk? Like when there was
an attempted talk. We always talked about sex on, like, it was wide open in our, like, it was never a
taboo thing.
A bad thing, never, but we joked about it a lot, whatever. But the one incident was when I was 15. I was dating a girl, though, that was 2 years older than me.
I was dating
a senior in high school.
That's how you rolled.
When I was a sophomore.
Nice.
And so,
by the way, can I just quickly say,
that doesn't surprise me.
That's a rare thing. Like a lot of times the seniors would date like younger girls, like the senior guys would date like younger. That would happen all the time in high school. But if you were like a sophomore guy and you were dating a senior girl,
savage.
You were like
savage
star hockey player, Billy. Were you star hockey player
like
on the team by
the
then?
School.
Well, our school wasn't a big hockey school. It had a team in Chicago, but you had to play what is now called AAA. I was out of the school a lot. I would take 15, 16 trips a year away, and when I could play for the high school hockey team, I would. It wasn't like it used to be. Well, it still is here. You know, it's big. But
point is, you were a hockey star at that point when you were 15.
I was playing all the time.
Yep.
I was playing all
the time. And the girls came running,
this,
didn't they?
But so anyway, I was dating this girl. And then so we land in Detroit to go play a weekend of games there. And it's just my dad and I, and great relationship with him. Different than all that I had with my mom. And my dad says, we get into the rental car. We go, and he gives me the old, your mother wanted me to talk to you about something. I'm like, what? Where's this going? But they were worried. Not naive. They were, you know, older girl,
sure.
Everything. So it literally went 12 seconds. I'm like, okay.
That's how fast it was for me the first time.
I'm like, all right, no, just be smart. That's all I got. So it was like, okay. just be smart. I was scared crapless about all the, you know, pregnancy thing. You know, I was about that. And, but I did some dumb things, but that's all right.
Well, so now, how old are your kids right now?
11 and turning 9.
So, I mean, when do you think you're going to possibly approach the subject? Because, I mean, I'm on the doorstep right now.
Well, I think, I mean, everybody's different, but I think if you just make it a conversational thing, that it becomes okay, it becomes, you know, hey, we'll talk about certain things. Of course, you know, I could never talk about certain things with authority like my wife can.
Yeah, yeah.
With our daughter and vice versa.
Oh, see, having a daughter would be a nightmare for me. I would just turn that over to my wife. I'd be like, you're doing that.
Well, that's what I do, you know, too, you do that. But on the other, I also think that you have to show, I mean, this is great sports radio. I think you have to show that you're also, as a father, I think that you understand, I mean,
don't
turn a blind eye and say, oh, no, not my kid.
Sure, that they can come to you and talk to you about
anything. That's my philosophy. So, yeah, no, I think if you just say, if it starts coming up and if you laugh about it a bit and you are honest about it, that's my philosophy. Because if you think that you're hiding them from something that they're not going to get, then you're a fool. That's my take.
Well, listen, if you need any videos, we've been sent a few from listeners.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That apparently they were used to, not the Pam and Tommy one, but there's one that's called, like, What's Happening Down There? I think that's actually the name of it. And it's this really, like, creepy 70s depressoid cartoon that, like, is enough to give you nightmares. So if you like it, and if you get nervous.
Well, how old are your kids now?
I got 11, and he's the one that I'm starting. The 8-year-old, I can wait a little bit.
A little.
But I think, and I'm like you. I'm one of those people that if you just talk about it and it's not as something that is taboo or whatever, and it's open, you know. And
you hope.
You hope.
You hope, because you sure as heck don't know.
Yeah.
You think you know what your kids are doing, and the truth is, most of the time, you don't, as well as you think you have the pulse of it.
Yeah.
They're away from you an awful lot.
Of course. And now with the internet, and on top of that, too, I was the weird kid that when they offered human growth and development in sixth grade, there was me and honestly, one other kid. It was just me and one other boy out of the entire sixth grade. It's like 400 kids in my class. Who weren't allowed to go to human growth and development because my parents would not sign the permission slip. So I had to sit in a room with this other kid and read this book about, like, by a guy named James Dobson. And it's something about, like, called Focus on the Family or something weird like that.
Yeah.
And so all the kids were going,
that's not uncomfortable.
Everybody,
not
let's
at
learn
all.
About sex in this room. Yeah. Except, I'm sorry, Rich Schertenlieb and Jeremy Conrad, you're in this room over here. Here's a really nerdy book that you got to read.
Still remember the kid's name?
Yes.
The other kid?
That was
Yeah. Of course I do. It was emotionally scarring.
Like, I was throwing it on your parents. Have you gone back to them saying, did you really make me sit that out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I busted my parents' balls about that. And it's funny. It's like, not as much as the one thing I bust my mom's balls about, the one thing I bust my mom about the most is the fact that she let me see any movie I wanted to when I was a kid. Like, there was, like, zero any kind of looking into what might be in the film. I saw Poltergeist when I was 5.
Oh, wow.
5. Yeah. Now, I think it would have been better if I would have seen the most explicit X-rated movie than Poltergeist. Because what is Poltergeist? It's a movie where all of the things that kids love turn against them and try to murder them. It is their toys in their room try to strangle them to death. It's the tree outside their window tries to reach in and swallow them. It's in the closet. There's a giant head monster that tries to pull you and swallow you whole. And on your TV, your favorite thing when you're a kid, it sucks you in and takes you to some weird nether region. Like, I mean, that was a movie. And I remember I talked about it one time on the air. My mother emailed me with this big long email. Poltergeist, I thought it was about a kindly ghost like Casper. I'm like, well, you obviously
Poltergeist
didn't see
for you was when I had older stepbrothers, and so at a young age, I saw inappropriate movies. I saw The Jerk, Bo Derek in 10.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, Porky.
Oh, yeah. Nothing inappropriate.
just there's on and on and on of these inappropriate movies because I had older stepbrothers that my parents never knew about because I was just introduced to these movies because of those guys.
You tagged along.
Yeah,
you were there.
I was there.
If you had older siblings or you had one of those old school cable boxes where all you had to do was stick a penny inside the side of it and you could get any channel you wanted. Oh, dude, you knew. I was watching Cinemax.
Yeah.
When I was 7?
Skinamax.
Yeah, Skinamax. I mean, and Skinamax is always, I mean, Hot Dog the movie was on constant rotation.
Great movie. Great movie, man.
Yes, indeed.
Love that movie.
Pretty good.
Like
you better
soundtrack.
All the time.
Yep. All right. So this game the other night.
Oh, a good transition.
Okay. I really have no idea how to
No easy way.
I'm awful at these things. But it was a
great game.
It was a great game.
Disappointing result.
The third period was a defensive breakdown.
Yep.
And I know that we talked about Charlie McAvoy. I think he was on ice for all three of those goals.
Yes.
Including the one that really was the turning point of the game. What do you make of this matchup against the Lightning? Because the Lightning are historically good. But the Bruins have shown they can hang with them.
So there was a lot of talk about, and you know, just stop me if you guys already did this. There's a lot of talk a couple of weeks ago when the Bruins thoroughly outplayed Tampa at TD Garden. That wasn't Tampa's number one goalie. Domingue's pretty good backup, one of the best in the league right now. But and they were 3 games in 4 nights, pretty healthy though too. They had all their team, but 3 games in 4 nights. So that's not the real Tampa team. I don't disagree, actually. Meaning that was a different situation. They weren't fresh. They probably weren't as intense as the Bruins were.
Bees didn't have Pastrnak.
Bruins didn't have Pastrnak. They go into Tampa. They're missing 4, then 5, as John Moore gets hurt later in the first period. Regular players. They're on the road for 8 days. Yes, it's not a back-to-back, but they're on the road. They're tired. Last game of the road trip, et cetera. No excuse. I'm not making any. So there's no BS here, all right?
Yeah.
Point is, the Bruins found another gear in that second period, actually late first and into the second, where they're like, all right, you know what? We can hang with these guys in their barn. We're better than them. Let's show it. Did the Bruins get ahead of themselves? Probably a little, come third period. Did they make some mental mistakes? No, probably. Absolutely they did. You know, they started to do things that were not what they were doing to get to that point. Does that mean that they still that I'm saying that they're better than Tampa? No. Do I think they can play with Tampa? Yes. Do I think they're going to have to be, if they get past Toronto in the first round, big if they get past and they go play Tampa, are they going to have to play close to, you know, perfect hockey for a seven-game series? Well,
yes.
Yeah, they're going to have to. But with all that said, I don't know if I've seen many other teams that will do that to Tampa. Maybe Washington, if Washington gets fully healthy, although they just lost a defenseman the other day in their on their D line. But may, you know, I think the Bruins have that chance. With all said and done, you know, you can't bury your head in the sand and say, well, it's just they screwed up in the third period.
Yeah.
But the thing that we kept hearing from the other night, relatively, or all the time, was we learned we have to use this learning experience. We have to move from this, but we have to understand what we did. I think they got ahead of themselves a little, and that's okay.
You also, it's not just the game they just played, Billy. It's the first time they met in Tampa. It was a 1-1 game in the third period, and then Tampa systematically tore them apart over the first 5 minutes and went ahead and won the game. The fact that the Bruins dismantled them at TD Garden and were with them each of the two times they played there gives me a lot of confidence that they can stay with this team in a second-round playoff series. If everyone is healthy, if they get Krug back, if they get Grizzlick back, those are a lot of ifs.
Yeah, but
from what we've been led to believe, those guys are going to be available come playoff time.
Exactly. So when we're playing that if, you know, and or but type game, and that's a wonderful game to play on sports radio. The reality happens when it's on the field, on the ice, whatever. So the Bruins find when the Bruins decide to initiate the physical contact and not receive the physical play from Tampa, the games are Jekyll and Hyde, night and day, whatever. Bad, you know, analogy or saying you want to use. Mm-hmm. They're totally different. When the Bruins decide, I like to call it play on your toes hockey versus wait and react hockey. If you wait and react to the Tampa Bay Lightning, you're screwed. They move the puck 5 or 6 times in 10 seconds on that one goal off the faceoff. And the Bruins were like, right? They were And, you know, Bruce Cassidy even talked about it. I'm paraphrasing here. You know, he puts that on the coaches. Because, you know, they need to prepare them for those face-off plays out of video and stuff. And you know what? I mean, look, I appreciate Bruce saying that. I'm sure the players do, too. You still have to pick up your man. Again, easier said than done. Let's also, the funny thing is, whenever our team, whatever your team is, whether it's the Pats, the Celts, whatever, the Bruins, whenever they're a little bit bad or a little bit off, everybody's like, oh, they suck. Oh, they can't. You know, I mean, it's like that defense mechanism. If you keep saying it, it's eventually going to happen, right? You know what I mean? Eventually, just understand the other team can be damn good, too. And they're great. They're the best team in the league. No question, Tampa. When they move the puck like that, if you wait to react, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You're absolutely
a
mess.
You have to play almost near perfect hockey.
You've got to be on your toes. You've got to know your assignments, and you've got to. And does that mean you're going to execute it perfectly all the time? No, but you have a better chance when you do. But if you let them initiate on the forecheck, you're a mess. Like Kucherov was non-existent in that game until he had room. Kucherov was non-existent, and he's temperamental. He's phenomenal. What a shot! I mean, you want to talk about a guy that can
load
up.
He's also the MVP of the league this year.
He's phenomenal when he has room, but when he's not getting room and he becomes petulant, he doesn't participate as much.
The young defenseman,
Clifton,
is he impressing you?
Yeah,
I mean he's talking about a physical aspect.
Yeah,
I mean, he was laying dudes out in that game.
You know what he is? He's that guy. We'll go back to our previous conversation that we started with, the sex talk. He's the guy that goes out to the bar that isn't the biggest, strongest, this, that, and everything. But all of a sudden, he's like, yeah, and the ladies are around.
Sorry. Just that confidence.
Yeah, he's got that confidence.
It's called I'm so impressed with you right now. I really am.
Isn't that called the big blank energy? Isn't that what it's called?
Yes, that's exactly what that's called. Just, like, yes.
He had it at Quinnipiac. I did a few of his games when he was at Quinnipiac. He had this almost Wild West to his game.
Sure.
And now,
Wild West.
Yeah. He's just like, he's got this swagger.
Awesome.
He's got the big blank energy.
So yes. He does. Him and Marchand will get along.
Oh, are you kidding me? You know, and his interviews, by the way, are great, too. But is he ready for prime time regularly? I mean,
if everyone's healthy, does he dress?
I don't think so yet.
Yeah.
But you know what he's done? In a matter of one season with two call-ups, he has shown Bruins management, coaches, teammates, that he is a legit call-up. He's a legit prospect and a guy that can earn a spot on this team. And he brings some different things that they need that every team likes. It's that one guy that you keep saying, how did he make it undrafted? How did he do it?
And that's how.
He does it with that big game swagger.
All right, playoffs right around the corner. If you have a question for Billy Jaffe, 617-779-0985. We will continue just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
There's a lot more to worry about than
Dutcher and Rick. It's a real nightmare. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Over the line, high slot, and out of the right circle. Here's Killorn. McAvoy's about to hop out. Under a minute to play in regulation. Bruins back at full strength. Sent left to the net. Fired. They score in the slot. Anthony Cirelli teed up for a perfect one-timer, and he hammers it by Rath. 5-4 Lightning.
985 Sports Hub, it's Toucher and Rich. We got Ted Johnson, Billy Jaffe in studio, and I really like, actually, right around this time of year, because this has happened a decent amount over the past couple of years, where people are kind of late getting on board a team that's playing well, and you saw evidence that finally people are noticing that the Bruins are a legit contender this year by the ratings of that Lightning game.
Well, the ratings, which you expected would be good. We didn't realize they were very good.
They were great. Was it the highest rated game of the season?
Of the season, which makes sense. And you know, the whole ratings game, and you know, to get into again, is crazy. I understand it, but as everybody loses ratings on regular over-the-air TV or whatever, cable TV, and goes to the online stuff,
sure.
The digital. I mean, I don't understand. I do understand it, but I don't, meaning how do you rank it? But anyways, yes, via regular TV.
Yeah.
What is it called? Terrestrial TV?
Terrestrial. Yeah, I guess so.
Poltergeist. yes, yesterday was a great, or 2 days ago was a great game, and I guess you hoped for it. You expected it.
Well, just more than anything, not even as far as, like, you know, being able to stick out your chest and go, but more than anything.
Because we have so much to do.
So much. You're all there for the Jaff, man.
Oh, yes, we have so much to do.
but it does kind of indicate where people's heads are at as far as how much they believe in a team. Because if they think a team's not going to do well in the postseason, you know, it turns a lot of people like, why am I watching these last few games?
Well, but you're right. But I think people also, you know, look, this is such an amazing sports town. We have so much stuff going on that there becomes this almost dilution of you know, being able to watch it. We've gone, by the way, head-to-head, the Celts and the Bees this year 40 times.
Yeah, it's more than I remember.
Unprecedented, really.
Isn't that it's not good for either in a marketing type thing? But you do it. It is what it is. We don't control it, so you do it. But Rich, I do agree that people are much more into it. I'll tell you what. This year, since Christmas, really, the amount of people conversing with me about the Bees, it's always been good, but it's even more this year. I'm not even talking on the air. I'm talking just everyday life. Has been noticeably different, and the amount of gear, the amount of everything has been, at least for me, you know, not like I keep a survey on this, but I can tell you it's different because this team makes people happy with their work ethic.
Yeah,
that's what they do, and people resonate with that. And you know, I've lived in, well, many towns now as in being involved in hockey and broadcasting, but this town and Chicago, where I'm from, if you give it your all, It sounds like a pep talk here. If you give it your all, you fight your heart. You know what I mean?
Ted knows what you're talking about.
They love it. They absolutely love it. There's a lot of towns out there for sports. And I lived in, you lived in the worst town.
The worst.
The worst in Atlanta.
Atlanta was the worst.
Atlanta's worse than Miami, I think. And that's saying a lot.
Except for college football.
Okay. Same thing. Okay. Anyways, they're both, you're right.
Yep.
But those are they're proud towns. You know when they're proud? When their team wins.
Yep.
That's
front runners,
it.
Yeah,
they couldn't even tell you any of the other stuff. And so, anyways, these two towns, Chicago and Boston, Chicago, I think that this team resonates with them. You heard it a lot. You know, they bring it. The Celtics haven't. God, well, I hope the Celtics do.
That's a thing that has something to do with this, too.
Let's talk about that.
Just the juxtaposition between the Celtics and the Bees. They're overlapping in their schedules, and one team is very hard to root for, and the other one is very easy to root for.
And on top of that, I've never understood this, but it is a thing, is that for some reason, a lot of fans here in Boston feel that they have to choose a side. Are you a Bruins guy?
I know.
Or are you a Celtics guy? And it's like anytime, like you know, I'll see someone tweeting about the Celtics game, like, the Bruins are on, idiot! And then it'll be like, all right, well, you can flip back and forth.
Yeah,
and like,
so
you have to be one or the other.
The biggest telling thing about that is, when you talk to the players of both teams, I don't know the Celtics players like I do the Bruins players, but an athlete generally wants another athlete in town to do well.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, and McAvoy and Pastrnak, I saw them out a while back at one of the Celtics games. Everyone goes to each other's games.
They want to, right?
More than they ever have when I was playing here, big time.
It's true. But I think, though, one of the results of the Celtics doing, basically pissing off the fans, not just by their play, but by the things Kyrie is saying. And meanwhile, you have these guys where Char is too old to be playing as well as he is, but he's fighting through it. And then Patrice Bergeron is the most likable athlete in this city, continues to play at, is he looking at a career year right now? As far as points?
Yes.
He already has.
Okay.
At the age of 33.
Yeah.
By the way, he missed games. And he has his, you know.
Absolutely.
So if he was healthy, you can play this game, you know, but if he was healthy, he'd be pushing 90 points as well.
Do you remember how many times that you looked at this team and you said, how are they able to pull off what they're pulling off? And
you're
now
right.
All of a sudden the lines are working, and it's just one of those, it's the blue collar mentality that you mentioned that I think the city looks at and goes, all right, these are guys we can easily get behind.
You're right. And they do
There's
have
relatability. There.
Right. Yeah. They have superstar ability or superstars in Bergeron. Say it. Look, Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby, the best players right in the league, right?
You know, yeah.
Patrice Bergeron is the best 200-foot center in the league.
You said Bergeron.
I know. Sorry, Bergeron.
Pierre McGuire, man, the most annoying
Bergeron
thing.
Bergeron.
Jesus.
I'll say Bergeron from now on.
Fine.
All right, we'll say it.
I can understand you now.
But Colin Bergie, you son of a gun.
But best 200-foot center in the game. And if you ask Sidney Crosby, he'd probably Bergeron, he'd say.
Sure.
So you've got that. And Patrice is as simple as whatever as anybody could be. You've got Chara, who's, you know, now, you know, social media involved in doing that. And he's just a regular guy that happens to be 6'9", 255 pounds, speaks six or seven languages, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But he's a regular guy when you're just talking to him. No pretense, nothing about himself when the interviews are on him. It's always about the team and the others. You've got Pastrnak, who has all world skills, and he's the kid that, you know, in school that everybody wants to play with all the time. And he's just like, okay, he's like a puppy. Okay, great. You know, and he keeps going. But despite having all world skills, he's just a regular guy that wants to hang out with his buddies. So yes, it's not even blue collar. It's also just there's an openness to them and all of them, and they're in it together. And of course, I mean, you know, people say all the time, well, you know, you're right. They have to play another good team or two or three if they're going to get to the Stanley Cup. That's part of competition. And I think sometimes people like to focus, whether it's on the negative with regard to, you know, I can't be a Bruins fan because I'm a Celts fan. Okay, that's your choice. But maybe you're missing out on a night of fun when your team isn't playing.
You know, Bergeron, it's funny that you mentioned that, because we were talking to Mike Gorman today about how, you know, Al Horford is such a, you know, he's a good guy and he goes and leads by example, but he's not the leader. And he was saying you almost need a leader to be someone who's the rah-rah guy who like pumps up the team. And Patrice Bergeron is the rare example of a guy who doesn't have to be the rah-rah guy. And Zdeno Chara will be the first one to tell you that Patrice Bergeron is the true captain of this team. I think he's even said that before. He goes, I wear the C, but I think that everyone looks at Patrice as the guy. And I know, obviously, Zdeno Chara, you know, leads in his own way as well. But when you're that huge, it's a little, it almost seems like a little easier to be the leader when you're that massive and imposing as when you're Patrice Bergeron, who doesn't have to be that guy, but he's just got that he never complains. He plays through ridiculous injuries, as do many hockey players.
Yep.
But the fact that he still commands that respect in that locker room without being the outspoken rah-rah
guy is
impressive.
It's like a Troy Brown for me. Like, Troy Brown was that guy. He never talked, but everybody respected.
Think about how fortunate the Bruins are to have, and this doesn't mean they're going to win a cup, but a leader on defense.
Yep.
And a leader up front.
How did Troy Brown do it? Like, what did he do that made everyone want to follow him?
The plays that he just made, so many plays every single game, and just like would get us out of trouble all the time. And he was always the last guy there, always working on his body, never getting in trouble, just a constant presence, and performed at a high level week in, week out, and didn't say a word. So when he did later in his career, it was like, whoa, everybody shut up.
This is a big deal.
This is a big deal.
Yeah.
Quietly.
And the Bruins have more guys in the room that will speak. You know, Chara and Bergeron will speak, no question. They do it more succinctly from what I'm told, and very directly, but it's still, there's an intensity there that gets the guys going. But then you get into the mix, you know, Marchand. He'll talk and guys listen.
They'll call guys out.
They'll listen. You have Backes. You have Miller. I'm going down the list. Torrey Krug takes a big leadership role.
Torrey Krug?
Yeah. Wow. Torrey Krug talks a lot in there. He's a guy that will, you know, play. I mean, look, he's battled, you know, his ass off to get to this level.
I just don't see him as a vocal. I agree. I mean, I think there's
You get a different hockey players usually. We are so, we're in a world of where hockey players are one way here, I'm pointing to the right, and one way to the left. They just are. Like, in social situations or settings outside of the team, whether it's on-air media or whatever, they're very different. That's why we always kind of celebrate the one player or few players that speak out. Drew Doughty is an example, plays for the LA Kings. He's an all-world defenseman. He called out a few guys the other day. 2 days ago in Canada, he hates Matthew Tkachuk. He said he has no respect for him, Keith's son, and hates him, and he talked about it. And then he literally called out. He said, I see all these talks about Brent Burns, who's a defenseman for the San Jose Sharks, who, if you're a hockey person, you know him. He's one of the great offensive defensemen out there. But he's like, I'm paraphrasing. He's up for Norris. Are you kidding me? For the best defenseman? I see him get beat 3 times a game out there. And so he's calling people out. We're like, yes, this is awesome. Give us more of this. Awesome. But 99% of the guys, Rich, they won't. They do it differently
in
public.
Well, we got only a few more regular season games left, and then it all starts. You excited?
I'm very excited. Tonight's game, unfortunately, is, we're not doing it. It's on NBC Sports tonight.
Okay.
So they're playing the Rangers. And you know what I'm excited for? They get a couple of days off. And if let's hope that one or two guys come back tonight. Let's hope a crew comes back. Hope Marcus Johansson comes back. I think he's going to make a big difference for this team, staying healthy. But then they got a couple of days off, Rich, where this time of year, I'm guessing they'll have one day off, but then they'll have a really good team practice on another day, and that's a big thing.
Yeah.
Get that. And then they go back on the road after Saturday's game for a couple. I am excited because the weather's turning. Finally, you know, once it gets to 50 degrees here in Boston, not 70 for me, 50, I'm like, spring.
Wearing shorts to a hockey game is the best feeling. It means your team's doing well.
Yeah. How about this? How about you come out of the game at 7 o'clock, 6:30 or 7, because that means you're the 3 o'clock game on a Saturday.
Now you're talking.
You still got the night.
Yeah.
And you've had 3 or 4, and you're ready for a few more, and you don't care.
Yeah, Billy?
Yes.
That's when you bring certain guys to the bar with you.
You bring your dude from the Wild West.
Yes.
All right. Billy, thanks for coming in, man.
All right, guys. Good to see you.
John Wallach's headlines, and then yesterday was the day that we love every year where Bill Belichick sits down in front of a bunch of reporters, drinks orange juice, and essentially tells them all to go to F themselves. We'll get to that right after Wallach's headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something.
Wonder Woman was there, but she's lost all her powers.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now back to Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
.95 of Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich, Ted Johnson in the studio. Man, the show's kind of flown by. We're already doing the stack here. So the there is, as everyone knows, all the owners and everyone's gathering out in Arizona and coming up with all sorts of strange rules with the GMs together, like the whole pass interference, defensive pass interference, and non-calls being reviewed, and the 2 minutes left in the half where they're going to be able to go up to the booth and blah, 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 blah. However, one thing that did come out of yesterday was that Robert Kraft has pled not guilty, and he's going to fight these charges stemming from what happened down there in Florida. That is just part of this, because not only is he going to end up going to trial instead of tomorrow when it originally was going to be, it's going to be, I think, April 9th is the date that they were throwing out there. But they're going to let cameras in the proceedings. So this
is that standard protocol, or is that kind of a new thing for this? Let's just say this is something they are doing when they typically don't do. What does that say?
You see, I don't know. I have no idea like what the standards are of when you're allowed to bring cameras in and when you aren't. It depends from state to state. But
I feel like they're doing everything they can to embarrass, if they can, Mr. Kraft.
Well, I mean, the way that they came out of the box and had these press conferences, and I honestly think that Adam Schefter was told by somebody in the police department that we got another big fish coming, and that's why that report came out. But the scariest thing about all of it is that it was reported yesterday, after Robert Kraft put his not guilty plea in, that someone or some people in the media have filed to get access to Robert Kraft's massage parlor video. It was announced, this was the announcement officially that came out, quote, media solicitation of prostitution case for the reported or for the purpose of opposing his motion of Robert Kraft for a protective order to prevent non-parties from gaining access to evidence gathered during the investigation, including videotapes, has been filed, which means that there's somebody going, I want it. I'm going to release it. Where can we get it? I still don't understand if part of the defense's whole argument is that these people obtained the tape illegally, how you can release it to the public when that whole thing is in question in the first place. However, I do realize that these things tend to see the light of day. I also understand that Robert Kraft has the most ridiculously high-paid attorneys that are probably scaring the living snot out of everyone who has access to this video, saying, we will sue, we will end your life. You will never be able to get another job, or if you do get a job, any of the money you make will go directly to us if you end up getting this video leaked and somehow released. So,
and there's a thinking too, though, Rich, that if Mr. Kraft was to kind of agree to the deal that they've offered him, which was basically say that if this thing went to trial, that you would lose at the end, and then some stipulations that you would have to do. And this would be, you'd be expunged. This would be expunged from your record. Like, some people say that if he was to accept that deal, that tape, it goes away.
I don't believe that's
part of the deal.
Because, okay, let's say he did that. Let's say he said, all right, I will plead no contest, but I admit that if it did go to court, I would have been guilty. Everything they asked for.
Yeah. And then he has to do the classes and the 100-hour community service and the STD test.
Let's say he does all that.
Yeah.
You telling me that someone still isn't going to pay for that tape? It's still worth money.
Someone is going to pay a lot of money for that tape. TMZ, I would think, would pay a crap load of money for that tape.
I don't want to see this tape. Like,
considering the people involved, you're probably right. I would not want to see that tape. But I got to be honest with you, there is a curiosity factor. There is. there's a curiosity factor with me.
I don't want to.
I don't think it's going to be put out. You know what I'm saying? Well,
is there a lot of enemies that Mr. Kraft has along the way? I mean, no, for people want to get this out, that there's a fervor.
Ted,
to get
other
this
than thing. The ownership
Ted.
Of the Jets, the Bills,
Ted,
and Miami?
You were a patriot. Do you not know how many people in this country hate anything having to do with the Patriots? So, yes.
It's a football team, but this is a human being, man. This
doesn't matter.
Do you know how many
there are enough nut jobs out there that can't differentiate.
You're absolutely right. They there's no way they can differentiate from one thing to the next. But, oh, yeah. I mean, Ted, there's going to be people who are going to want to pay for this. And I think that you continue to fight it because either way, whether you win or you admit to it, or not admit to it, but you plead no contest and do everything they asked, it still has the same chances of the tape getting out. So why not fight it? Why not try to get your record clean?
If that's the case, Rich, I would fight it. You make valid points, or it's like if it's legit not on your record,
yep,
then you can with confidence say to people, like, I didn't do what you're accusing me of.
He's going to win.
With a clear conscience.
It's a case that he's going to win, but I don't even think that matters as much as just this tape not coming out. But it does matter.
No question.
It does matter. I mean, it's just if you're him, I feel so bad. It's like you're constantly dreading that moment where your cell phone just starts getting.
And there's no guarantee, regardless of how many lawyers you throw at it, no matter how much money you spend trying to squash it.
It's almost like
always in the back of your mind forever, but for a long, long time.
It's almost as if you stayed at an Airbnb and you realize that they're allowed to tape in the inside of the house. Any moment.
I don't think a tape of you is going to be put out on the open market.
There's
though.
Rich walking around showing the world his doog.
I think, honestly, that's a tape for parties, for the people who own it. That's not a tape for the media to go after. I think you're a little different.
Did you hear Jerry Jones comment? He was asked about Robert Kraft, the situation.
No, I didn't. What did he say?
He basically, in so many words, said, I don't have a comment on that, but thanks for asking. I was just kind of... What was that throwaway line? But thanks for asking.
If I'm him, I'm not saying a word against
Robert Kraft. I was just going to say, who's your go-to owner you talk to about that first? It's Jerry Jones, right?
But all the owners are on the same page with this. Nobody is touching this.
Because what if it's you next?
But what does that say about NFL owners in general?
I mean, it says that, well. Here's the other thing.
Hold the players to this high moral standard.
Of course,
and you get fined for this and fined for that. Yet
you're a billionaire. You have I don't give enough money. You do strange things. There is not one owner that doesn't have a skeleton in that closet.
And you know what I believe? I believe that each owner has skeletons in their database about all the other owners. I think everyone knows. And they just wait to release it if something bad happens.
When we were out in California last year. Remember the time after the meetings were over where you got drunk? Oh, of course.
Yeah, sure. And everyone's got pictures and they've got receipts and things.
Wow, have on each other.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You don't
Low
think
down it, dirty dogs.
Yes. You know how personal it got during the whole Spygate thing?
No. Yeah.
I mean, you heard why everyone ganged up, obviously, after Deflategate. I mean, they were pissed. And you don't think that even people like Robert Kraft remember that? I talk about keeping receipts.
Yeah.
These guys remember everything.
Oh, that's no question. Hey, don't kid yourself. When this story broke, there are a lot of people watching from the Patriots organization what people are saying about and taking note, taking down license plate numbers.
If I'm Jerry Jones, I'm going to say a word.
Smart man.
Saying a word.
There are a lot of people that are, their job is to listen and to watch what other people are saying specifically about this case.
All right, so I want to hear this real quick. This is just a brief taste of Bill Belichick, who actually this year went to the breakfast meetings and answered questions from the press. Dan, do you have it right there? I just want to listen to a little bit of Bill Belichick. I have a feeling I know what we're going to expect here.
So did you have any indication going into the offseason that it was likely Gronkowski was going to retire?
Yeah, it's offseason's offseason, so.
So you were not necessarily planning for...
So that wasn't even like an audio response. I can hardly hear the questions. But was that just like a head shake? And he never sat down. He just stood up like he was like a caged animal. There's a video somebody posted yesterday of about 45 straight seconds of everybody with their recorders in his face, and nobody is saying a word. It's Bill Belichick looking at them like, who's going to ask a question? And the reporter's looking at him like, I don't have any questions. And it goes on for 45 agonizing seconds.
And you know what? Bill was probably bathing in it. Nobody that I've ever met in my entire life is more comfortable with uncomfortable silences than Bill Belichick.
Jeff Howe tweeted, Bill Belichick fielded 116 questions over 43 minutes this morning. Wow, 43 minutes. 2.7 questions per minute. He said 1,700 words, an average of 15 per response. His most frequent phrases were, we'll see, which he said 21 times, and I don't know, which he said 13 times.
Blame the Cleveland
Jeff
media.
Jeff Howe, man.
Jesus.
That's a tedious job.
Oh, yeah, my God. I understand he charts, you know, participation and all that kind of stuff, but that's next level stuff right there.
And to that I say, you know, Bill Belichick looks at him and goes,
I'll go home and get your shine box.
As he always seems to do to the press. All right, we will check in on Zolak and Bertrand, find out what they got going on next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Thanks for starting your day with Toucher and Rich.
Why are you doing this to me?
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. And listen, despite all the love from the Ted heads who've been calling in to tell Ted Johnson that they like hearing him on the air, it's
very
been
kind.
A very easy person to do the show with.
I like that, man.
But
I've worked with a lot of different hosts in Houston just because they weren't sure who to put me with. And so I've had a lot of exposure to different guys. And so I pride myself in being able to adapt and adjust to different hosts. So, you know, so I like it.
So you are the best.
And Rich.
You're the best.
You know, when I fill in either for you or for Fred, it's just like a glove, baby.
Well, it's easy because, you know, it was one of the deals. The first time I talked to you about, hey, what do you need from me? And show up and have strong takes. Okay. I can do that.
That's right. Bring the thunder.
Yeah, man.
That's all we need.
Well, it's your time to talk. Say something. Let's go.
So it'll be a full Voltron tomorrow. We'll have the entire crew back. It's going to be good to have Fred back in studio, as much as we're going to miss, obviously, Ted in here. He'll be back from, did he go to Turks and Caicos? Is that where he
went?
Yes, Turks
and Caicos. Yep.
All right. So he's going to be, we're going to have everyone back. John Wallach will be here. Nick will, I'm sure, be around. And I'm so bummed I missed Kiss last night. I am so bummed Kiss was in concert and I didn't get to go.
Oh, last night was tonight.
Oh, yeah. It's the best comedy show you'll ever see.
Now, you know who's coming to town this weekend?
Kevin James?
The Money Man.
Oh, the Money
Man is at Foxwoods on Saturday, and I'm debating whether or not to go.
To Foxwoods? You'd go all the way to Foxwoods to see Eddie Money?
I might go see Eddie Money in Foxwoods on Saturday night, do a little gambling. I'm considering it. There are still tickets available, oddly enough.
But hang on. He'll be playing in Natick in like 2 months.
That's a good point.
Did he play? He played at that hotel where that thing, where the shooting was.
Where the shooting was. He always, he goes through there like every Thanksgiving.
Okay. Have you seen the video of the shooting that was at the hotel?
I have not seen it. No.
Oh, it's crazy. So I guess it was around midnight. Some dude, it's like a video from inside the lobby, and the two glass doors are shut, and you see a guy running full speed, right to the middle of those two glass doors and somehow is able to pry it open. And this guy's running away from somebody who you can't see.
Oh, boy.
And he goes running into the lobby and takes a right. While the guy takes a right, you see a second person come in and pry open the door and stick his arm out with a gun.
Oh.
For some reason that you can't see, the guy who took a hard right ends up turning back around and running right in the line of fire of where the gun is.
I'm like, where are you going?
So the guy who's got his gun sticking through the two doors is pointing directly at this guy who might be 4 feet in front of him, fires off the gun, and misses him.
Yep. How is that possible?
Maybe it's because your arm is stuck between two doors and it's tough to aim. But
steadying your...
It's a moving target, too.
I just want to know, like, I want a wide-angle shot, like, why did you run the other direction when you were running away from it?
No clue. Right. I thought the same thing, but
that's weird.
Yeah, that was odd. But Ted, thanks for coming
in. Bud. All right, guys.
Solak and Bertrand there at Warrior Ice Arena today for the Bruins. We will see you all tomorrow. Full Voltron. Bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.